from downtown San Francisco, this is 95.7 The Game.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome once again to Warriors This Week Live alongside Mark Grady. This is Dan Devone. One game remains as the Golden State Warriors lose what had just simply playoff intensity in a playoff atmosphere and a playoff type game. Certainly playoff or play-in implications were on the line for both teams in a game that the Golden State Warriors have been pointing to for some time, and they come up on the short end. 114 to 109 are the final numbers as Golden State right now finds themselves at that number 10 seed. Will they, when things are all said and done, find themselves once again at the bottom rung of the ladder? We talk the play-in series at number 10. Are they resigned to that play-in seeding? We'll talk about it for the next 3 hours. We'll get into what happened last night. We'll talk about, of course, the Lakers, the Sacramento Kings, and break down all the potential scenarios as to who the Warriors will play next week in game one of the play-in. Mark, let's bring you in really quick. What jumped out to you last night? In fact, let's not even waste any time and get into that second quarter and what the hell happened. How would you explain that away?
45-22 was the second quarter edge for the Pelicans. After they struggled to shoot the ball in the first quarter, 1-for-8 from downtown in the first, they go 10-for-13 in the second quarter from deep. C.J. McCollum catches fire. Trey Murphy, the third, a sharpshooter in his third year out of Virginia, he catches fire. They don't miss. They put up 45 points in the second quarter in a game in which they only scored 114. Like, 114 isn't a crazy amount in today's NBA. 45 of them came in one quarter. The Warriors got outscored by 23 points in that second quarter, a game in which they lost by 5. That means, Dan, they outscored the Pelicans by 18 points in quarters 1, 3, and 4 combined. They lose quarter 2 by 23 points, and it was a similar story that we've seen throughout the season. It was turnovers, it was poor decisions that led to easy buckets the other way, and while the Warriors played, honestly, pretty good basketball the rest of the game, it was just so bad in the second that they could not overcome it.
All right, so we're going to talk about it. As I mentioned, we'll open up the phone lines early at 888-957-9570. That's 888-957-9570. I know you want to get in on the conversation. Join us here this afternoon as we talk about the Golden State Warriors going forward following their most recent loss, that at the hands of the New Orleans Pelicans. Once again, the final number is 114 to 109. What did them in again, as Mark has pointed out, was that fateful second quarter in which the Pelicans at one point hit eight consecutive threes. After going 1-of-9 in that first quarter from three-point territory, they go 10-of-13 in the second quarter to go along with the Golden State Warriors. 9 turnovers, 4 of which by that of Steph Curry, who did not play well throughout the majority of that game. Once again, Steph, who closes better than anybody, Mr. Clutch, did what he does in that fourth quarter, but it simply was not enough. But the 4 turnovers by Steph, the 9 collectively by the team in that second quarter, that pretty much was your ball game. As the Warriors, as I mentioned, now find themselves in that 10 seed. One of the things we want to get into this afternoon, and we got a lot, and I mean a lot to talk about, including, do they rest the starters? It seems as though it's a foregone conclusion, if you're to believe what it is that the head coach Steve Kerr had to say after the game yesterday. Is that something that sits okay with you? Are you okay with essentially, potentially, giving away that last game? Or do you still believe there's an outside shot of getting to the 8? Or does it mean enough to you to host that game and be the number 9 seed and host whomever, whether it's the Lakers and or the Sacramento Kings? Let's not waste any time and get right into it. 888-957-9570. We kick things off with Joe. Joe, get us going. How are you this morning?
Doing great. Thanks for taking my call. You guys do a great job. First time I've called on the Warriors show on Saturday, so thanks for taking my call. You know, I just wanted to mention some of the things that I was not surprised, but I'd say disappointed on a last night's game. You know, you guys talk about it all the time, and everybody does. But, you know, the fans were kind of pumped going into the streak, but you know, I love the Warriors. I'm really an optimist, not a pessimist, but I've always thought on the streak, a lot of the games we played were against teams that weren't that good or teams that were missing key players. So I wasn't as blown away with the record that everyone's talking about. And for the same reason you guys talk about, the turnovers and also giving up threes, The teams just run up the score. You know, we lost by 5 points. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that I think the Pelicans had, what, like about 23s? Even if you ran them off the three-point line and didn't let them have any threes and gave them layups, you would save 10 points right there or whatever it would be. I don't know. So I just don't understand, you know, getting excited with Trayce Jackson-Davis and Looney alternating. I thought, you know, hey, if we could just not do the turnover thing and keep the other team from scoring all the threes, the Warriors have the talent, just that they just can't seem to play clean games. The teams that have maybe 8 or 10 turnovers in a game, they're in there. I think the Pelicans had like 8. That's going to get you right in the game. And we got 16 turnovers. So I'm disappointed like a lot of fans. Thanks for letting me give you my input. But I didn't think the Warriors were going to go very far because of those two reasons. And they kind of showed everybody that from last night's game. I'll take your comments off the air, and thanks for taking my call. You guys are great.
You got it, Joe. Joe from the 818, the SoCal, Southern California, kicking it off this afternoon. By the way, Austin, you got beat to the punch for the second week in a row. We'll wait for your call. But, Grant, I'll let you explain that away. How do you defend the three, and how would you explain what it is that the Warriors suffered? Because I will tell you this, and I'll let you give your explanation of just exactly what broke down for the Golden State Warriors in that second quarter. I'll tell you this, and it might be, you know, counter to sort of public thinking here or what's popular. I thought that the Golden State Warriors played good defense. And as Steve Kerr alluded to, this has turned into a make or miss league, as oversimplified as that might sound. And just like the Warriors, when they hit 26 threes last week in that big win over the Los Angeles Lakers, if you're the Pelicans and you're going to hit 8 consecutive threes, there's nothing I don't think anybody can really do at that point. Your thoughts?
The Pelicans certainly made some tough ones. C.J. McCollum made a number of them. Really good ball movement, good plays. They earned some open shots. They made some tough ones. I thought there were a couple of moments where the Warriors lost Trey Murphy, and you can't do that. Trey Murphy is an elite shooter in the league since, I think, March 1st. He is the 6th best percentage in terms of three-point percentage of players that shoot 8 or more from downtown. So he's not just a guy that he's going to spot up a couple of times a game. He shoots it often, and he's very, very good at it, shooting 40-plus percent over the last, like, 6 weeks now. Now, he made some deep ones, and Steve Kerr, post-game, as you alluded to, said, you know, credit to New Orleans for making some difficult shots. But there were a couple of times where I think the Warriors lost some shooters. And you can't do that. You can't do that to Trey Murphy III. You got to know your personnel. He is going to hit you from deep over and over and over again if you allow it. Now, if you do get to a point where they just catch fire and they make 8 in a row, they go 10 of 13 in one quarter, you're right, there's not a ton you can do about it. But it was the three-point line that hurt you time and time and time again. Our caller was right, Joe from the 818. They made 23s. First time in franchise history for the Pelicans, they made 20 or more threes in consecutive games. They did it last night, or 2 nights ago now, in Sacramento. They did it last night here in San Francisco. You knew what their plan of attack was going to be. They're going to try to gun you from outside, and they did that. After you were great in the first quarter, it's not like every single one of those made threes, Dan, was wide open, but there were some breakdowns. I thought it wasn't terrible, and you only give up 114 points. It's not the end of the world. The turnovers is what did you in, and specifically the live ball turnovers that led to some of those open shots. But there were some moments I felt like the Warriors got a little bit lost defensively, maybe over-rotating, sagging off of the wrong guy, going to a poor shooter and leaving the better shooter wide open. But you're right, it wasn't terrible by any stretch, but there were some breakdowns throughout that game.
Yeah, 15 points is what led to the turnovers leading to 15 points by that of the New Orleans Pelicans in that fateful second quarter. You talked about C.J. McCollum as well as the rest, where I'll talk about C.J. McCollum.
He was so good.
You alluded to the Pelicans, who shot it so well the night before with 23s against the Sacramento Kings. McCollum had 9 threes in that game against the Kings. Now, they went back-to-back, much like that of the Golden State Warriors, who had to travel from Portland back to Chase following a victory. The Kings coming off an emotional, huge win against Sacramento. And I just didn't think they'd have enough left in the tank for a big game against the Warriors that had, you know, energy once again at Chase. You can't blame the crowd. They were involved. But listen, sometimes you just got to doff the old cap. And listen, nobody goes after the Warriors, certainly when they don't play well, as much as I do, especially on this show. And I would love to sit here and say, hey, you know, that's on you, Warriors. That second quarter, you can't let a team shoot that many threes, or you can't get blowed out 45-22 in one quarter. I mean, that simply can't happen. But to be honest with you, what the hell are you going to do? That's today's NBA. Everybody addresses the three-point stripe. Everybody coming out of AAU, out of high school, and certainly they cultivate that skill set in the NBA. Everybody can shoot threes. And when you have that sort of confidence and that sort of mojo, I don't know that anybody can do anything. I know Trey Murphy had a few that maybe he was open, but that dude was hitting from the parking lot. Those things were Mitch Wishnowsky punts. The dude had this loft, and he was shooting from 30 feet out. I know Trey can shoot it a little bit, but give me a break. And C.J. McCollum sidestep threes over. I saw a play where Pajemski anticipated the three, got a hand up, was in his grill, and C.J. still knocked it down. And Pajemski just shrugged his shoulders like, what the hell do you want me to do? And you know what? There is nothing you can do. That is today's NBA. I think that if you're going to address the three-point territory, and listen, you know, the Warriors, you sort of created this, you know, if you really want to get down to it.
Yeah, of course.
Back in the day, you started all of this, and now everybody thinks about threes. Every big has got to be able to shoot a three in order to get time. And this is what happens, is that sometimes if you're feeling it and you can shoot it from three-point territory, I just don't think, Grant, there's anything anybody could have done yesterday.
Maybe the way you could have avoided it was not turning the ball over endlessly in that second quarter, because that's what got the run going for New Orleans. And the live ball turnovers, you make it so hard on your defense. Even if you're a great defensive team and you're playing lights out defense, you turn the ball over, it turns into a fast break the other way. You get an open look at a three. You get an easy dunk. There was a Zion dunk in transition. There were some steals by CJ, by Trey Murphy, by Herb Jones, who's a great perimeter defender. You do that and you're asking your defense to do something impossible, which is try to stop a team when you can't get your defense set. And this is a New Orleans team that's also playing without Brandon Ingram. They expect him back tomorrow. You're playing against a team that is without one of their best offensive players, and it was still that much of a struggle, which goes to show just how difficult it is to stop a team when you're giving up those live ball turnovers. And, you know, some of them, like the Warriors have always kind of danced and towed the line of like chaos or controlled chaos. And, you know, with the style that they play, they're going to have some turnovers and they're going to turn the ball over, and it's going to be frustrating at times. And Steve Kerr is going to want to rip his hair out at times. Like, that's the nature of Warriors basketball. But so many of those turnovers last night, specifically in that second quarter and at times in the second half as well, second quarter was the low point for sure. But it was just bad decisions, terrible decisions. Steph Curry throwing a one-handed lob from nearly half court that just sails over everybody's head. Trying on an inbound pass to squeeze a pass inside down low where there are three defenders standing there, and it's a turnover. He had seven. It probably should have been 9 or 10 because there were a couple that were about to be stolen away. But if it wasn't for a heady play by Draymond or Pajemski, who stole the ball back before the Pelicans officially got possession, that would have been another turnover. It was really, really, really ugly, some of the decision making. And I think it goes to what you said earlier in the show, right off the very top. Steve Kerr sounds like he wants to rest at least a couple of veterans tomorrow against Utah. Steve Kerr has said in the past, Stephen Curry's fatigue, when he is fatigued, how do you see it? How does it show itself? It shows itself in his decision-making, and I thought that was on display last
night. Yeah, he just simply can't go back-to-back any longer and still be effective.
36 minutes in Portland, and then he played again last night.
You can do it, but you're, again, going to have to offset it with somebody else, which, again, gets right back to square one when you talk about what is the biggest culprit in the room. If you're to analyze the Golden State Warriors in the 2024 campaign, it's the fact that, again, they just don't have that consistent score on this basketball team that's not named Steph Curry. And so the idea of him going back-to-back, we've seen it throughout the entire season. A well-rested Steph Curry, lights out, look out, opposition. If Steph Curry is pressed, he's prone to making mistakes, turnovers, and just won't be as effective.
He still was
shooting
awesome in the fourth quarter.
Well, he still closes better than anybody. He is still the clutch gene begins and ends with that guy, as far as I'm concerned, currently in the NBA. But it brings up sort of the bigger point looking forward when we talk about the Utah Jazz. Where are you at if you're Steve Kerr as far as sitting? And I don't know, because last time, you know, he gave the night off to Draymond Green as well as Klay Thompson. When you say rest or potentially sit, is everybody sitting, meaning Steph, Draymond, Klay? Do you sit Wiggins? Well, Trace Jackson Davis and anybody under the age of 25? You're playing, all right? Sorry, man. You're too young for any sort of load management. Load management shouldn't come into the vocab of the lexicon until you're on the other side of 30. I don't even want to hear it. But when it comes to the veteran and or the core, what are you doing if you're the head coach of the Golden State Warriors tomorrow as far as rest?
It starts with resting Steph. That's for sure. Steve Kerr, you alluded to this. Let's just hear it really quick. Steve Kerr was asked last night about resting guys on Sunday. Here's what he said.
Could you be resting some guys on Sunday?
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, where does it begin? It begins with Steph. And this has been a conversation now for a long time. Do you remember the game a few weekends ago now? It was the Sunday game in Minnesota where Steph played 29 minutes and 51 seconds. And Steve Kerr kind of joked later that it was becoming like a nationwide story that he didn't play 30 minutes. And I tried to save Steph from 2 minutes and maybe it cost them the game. Maybe it didn't. They lost a close one. Maybe if you get more Steph, maybe they win. Who knows? And that would make a big difference for the Warriors right now if they had one extra win. But he's been trying to save Steph Curry some minutes for a really long time now. Did not play last time out against Utah at home a week ago. I'd be shocked if he plays tomorrow.
Okay, maybe we need to parse this out. Does resting, meaning not playing the entire game, I'll just, for conversation's sake, Steph's not playing. Let's just assume that Klay, Draymond, and Wiggins all sit. And maybe GP2 because he's got the tender hamstring. Just give him another day's rest.
It's a calf.
Calf as well. Yeah. All right? None of those guys are playing. Are we saying that by not playing those guys, you're conceding the game to that of the Utah Jazz? Does not playing them equate to a loss?
They beat the Jazz relatively easily without Steph last time. Now Draymond and Klay played. I would say Steph's the most likely to sit. Draymond's the next most likely. I wouldn't be necessarily terribly surprised if Klay plays.
He led the team in minutes last night.
Yeah, he did. But the other thing is, Utah isn't necessarily trying to win basketball games either at this point. You could probably still beat Utah without Steph, without Draymond. Maybe it's a little closer than you would hope. But the other side of this is, Dan, it might not matter if you win or lose. You might still be in the 10 no matter what. And the Warriors have, I think, determined, Steve Kerr has determined, and maybe this conversation is happening down at Warriors headquarters today as we speak, all day today and early tomorrow. Tip-off is at 12:30 tomorrow here on 95.7 The Game, a special time slot for the final day of the regular season. All Western Conference teams will tip off at 12:30, so no team has an advantage or disadvantage. They're probably figuring it out now, but I think the conclusion that they will come to, at least based on what Steve Kerr said yesterday, is there's a slight, very, very, very slight chance we could be the 8. There's a decent chance we could be the 9. But considering our record at home this year and considering what we've been on the road this year, we've already won twice in L.A. recently. It's not worth the risk we run by continuing to push our veterans. We will live with the result against Utah without Steph, whether it's a win or a loss, and we will deal with everything else that comes with it because we will have a more rested and fresh Steph as a result.
There's a lot to chew on there because I'm a big fan right now of rest. When it comes to the Golden State Warriors, when it comes to every team this time of the year, which is why you want to be the Boston Celtics and get that number one seed so you can put your feet up for more than a week, which is why the Warriors wanted to get that sixth seed probably more than any other team, not only in the Western Conference, but I'll include the Eastern Conference, because when your core is in your mid-30s and you have Steph in your late-30s, you need those 6 days off more than anybody else. Rest, when it comes to the Golden State Warriors, are paramount to even a win against the Utah Jazz when you think about potentially being a 10 or a 9. I could see that argument. Rest is vital for every team in the NBA this time of the year. There's nobody that's vying for a playing game or that's headed to the playoffs that isn't dealing with aches and pains or somebody that could use an extra day off or somebody that has, you know, nobody's at 100%. So getting days off right now are vital. I think everybody should understand that. but X that times five when you're talking about the Golden State Warriors. Yes. So rest is significant. It's serious. I get that. I do, however, and again, maybe I'm alone back on Dan's Island here, that I know a lot of people will you know, are in the camp of the Warriors will play much better away from home, and certainly the record is supports that. They're a 500 team at Chase. You want me to explain it? I can't. Sometimes sports just simply doesn't make sense. Who the hell knows? And you can come up with a million theories. Go ahead. None of them are going to make sense. Other than, you know, sometimes crap happens in sports, and that's what we're witnessing in terms of their home record this year. I still don't want to play a road game when it comes to the playoffs. I don't care. I do not. I am never going to come to the conclusion. I tell you what, we beat the Lakers in L.A. last week. We should be okay to play on the road. And so being a 9 or a 10 really doesn't matter to us. I think being at home, sleeping in your own bed, and yes, playing at Chase despite the record should be something that should have a high level of importance for the Golden State Warriors.
Yes. They would obviously rather be the 9 than the 10, despite what their home and road records say this year. But it is a balancing act that they're trying to determine. Is it worth the risk you run by continuing to push your old and aging veteran core? Like, are you going to have a better chance of beating, say, either the Lakers or the Kings on the road with a more rested Steph and Draymond potentially, or still potentially the Kings and the Lakers on the road with a less rested, like that? You have what the Warriors are running into here is potentially their worst case scenario, where they push their guys very hard at the end of the regular season and they get nothing in return for it. They still are stuck with the 10. And that's what last night did. It is out of the Warriors' hands now. For the Warriors to jump up from the 10 spot, they need either the Lakers or the Kings to lose. Not impossible. The Lakers have a tough game in New Orleans tomorrow. New Orleans is not locked into a playoff spot yet. Well, into a postseason spot yet. But they're in the 6. They need to win to keep the Suns from chasing them, and they desperately want to be the 6 because that means you avoid the play-in tournament. So New Orleans will try to win tomorrow. I guarantee it. And Brandon Ingram is likely going to be back for them as well. So that's going to be a tough game. But for the Warriors to get out of the 10 seed, they need help. I think it would be a different story, Dan, if it was win and you're the 9. If it was in your hands, maybe they attack it a little bit differently, and then we can more accurately figure out how much being at home versus on the road means to them. But considering that they need to win and they need someone else to lose, and by the way, the Kings are not losing. They have Portland at home tomorrow. The likely scenario is the Lakers losing on the road in New Orleans. That's decently likely. But because it's not just in their hands, they don't control their own destiny in terms of the 9 seed. Because they need help, I think they will come to the conclusion that rest is more important, and we will deal with having to win 2 road games, 2 do-or-die road postseason games to make the playoffs. I mean, they have a bad hand, and this is the hand that they dealt themselves, honestly, but they have a bad hand. There's no easy, good, 100% right answer here.
Yeah, and I wasn't saying that one or the other is right necessarily, resting players and or just being resigned to playing on the road. I just don't think we can be all that dismissive that this is a team that's better on the road, especially when you get into a postseason atmosphere. I think you want to play at home. But rest, certainly, again, when it comes to all teams in the NBA, but specifically as it relates to an old basketball team, which is what the Warriors are, rest is pivotal. So I can see both sides of the argument. Man, you nailed it, because when you think about it, they went all in, Grant, on getting that 8 seed. Actually, at one point, they were eyeing the 6 seed, if you were to believe Mr. Brandon Pajemski just a couple of days ago. This is a team that was looking to improve their status once they recognized that the basement was the 10. If you think about it, they could have been resting guys for about 2 weeks now. If you're going in as the 10 seed, you know, they put all their chips in the middle of the table. And that, to go along with the demands of the scheduling for this basketball team this year, where everything was sort of backloaded after the death of their assistant coach and all the travel that they've had to endure over the last couple of weeks. And they just said, we're all in. I know we're old, but we got to play. Steph, you got to play back to back. Let's just go for it and go for that 6 seed, or let's look to get to a 7. And if you're going in as the 10, I know this is all retrospect, but you simply could have been resting guys for the last 2 weeks of the season. Guys are going to be taking time off. So the fact that if indeed, and it's, I would say that the percentages are probably more than 75 that you go in as the number 10. But if that's the scenario, this has been a lot of wasted effort on the part of the Golden State Warriors over the last 10 days.
A lot of wasted effort. You're right. Now, I think there is probably something to be said for, I think this was something Steph Curry said post-game last night. You want to go into the postseason feeling good about yourself. And the last, now, 11 games, they're 9-2 in those. They're playing, before last night, they had been playing some of their best basketball, if not their best basketball of the whole season. So while, you know, this winning streak of late hasn't necessarily done them much in terms of standings, they probably have felt a little bit better about themselves of late than they have the whole season. But does all of that get washed away with what happened last night? Maybe. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's all for naught, essentially.
All right. We're just getting our feet wet. For the next 2.5 hours, we're talking Warriors. We're talking playing. The text line 650. Where are you at, Dan? I'm right here. Where the hell are you? 888-957-9570. Let's get it going. The Golden State Warriors, who do you want to play in that playing game? Do you want to see Sacramento? Do you want to see him at home? Does it matter if you see him on the road? Or do you want to play the Lakers? Does it matter if you see LA once again down at Crypto? Or do you want to see him out at Chase? Or are you still hanging on if the Golden State Warriors can get in at that 8 seed, which means you can afford to lose, well, you have two shots at it, quite frankly. You can afford to lose one game. Where are you at with the Golden State Warriors when it comes to the play-in? Your thoughts on that debacle of a second quarter as they lose to the New Orleans Pelicans. Mark Grandy, Danville Warriors this week. We'll be back with much, much more right after this.
McCollum has it at midcourt, 5 to shoot, off the screen, steps around Curry, pump fake, takes the triple, it's up and good again! C.J. McCollum has just been on fire after the first few minutes of the game, hits another three, he's at 7 of his last 11 triples.
Now back to Warriors this week on 95.7 The Game.
On the short end, losers 114 to 109. It's kind of getting some audio issues here, Graham, but you can hear me, right? Thank you, sir. Warriors lose it by 5 last night to the New Orleans Pelicans as Golden State now finds themselves, well, right where they were just a couple of weeks ago. And that is in the basement of the Western Conference as far as the play-in is concerned at the number 10 seed. A lot of things were hanging in the balance, a lot of moving parts, certainly an opportunity. Should they have won last night to get in at that number 8, which would give them a couple of more days rest, and then obviously would set up that scenario where it wasn't one and done. They could afford to lose that one game and still have another opportunity. So the Golden State Warriors now find themselves in really a daunting sort of situation because I guess was their fate sealed last night? I mean, if we're really to sort of be realistic about this whole thing, I've maintained, Grant, all along that this is a Warrior team that I felt could have made a run in the Western Conference, right, in the playoffs this year. Nobody in that conference should scare Dub Nation, and certainly doesn't scare me. The Minnesotas of the world, the OKCs, the Sacramentos, the LA Clippers, all beatable teams. Would the Warriors be underdogs? Probably. Now, I would put Denver since the All-Star break, sort of, they've separated themselves from everybody else. And I think that's the team to beat, not only in the Western Conference, but I think in the NBA this year as well. They just have the pedigree now, and they're just too good. I don't think the Warriors stand a chance in a 7-game series, but again, you never know. Everybody else, the Warriors could potentially beat. However, the caveat being rest. I'd have to qualify that the Warriors could beat anybody in the West and make a run with the proper rest. What they now have to do, potentially, what's in front of them, is win 2 games, maybe both on the road, and then in a quick turnaround in less than 48 hours have to take on the number one seed out of the Western Conference, to me, is just not doable. And I think that the loss last night to that of the New Orleans Pelicans pretty much sealed the fate as far as the Golden State Warriors and any opportunity of making somewhat of a run in the Western Conference playoffs this year. It does.
It does seem that way, because you're looking at the Warriors, if they were to make it out of the play-in and say there isn't some miracle tomorrow, and by miracle I mean the Blazers beating the Kings and then also the Pelicans beating the Lakers, because that's the only way in which you get to the 8 seed. So let's say that's off the table, which it very likely is. The Golden State Warriors are going to have to play on Wednesday on the road, likely, and win. And then they're going to have to play on Friday on the road and win. And then they're going to have to go to either Oklahoma City, Minnesota, or Denver on Sunday and begin.
And it's not happening.
Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, all in different cities.
Now, look, you could push back on me and say, well, it happened last year with the Los Angeles Lakers and an old LeBron James.
They were in the top half of the play-in tournament. They were not in the 9-10 game.
But let's just, for sake of conversation.
Neither were the Miami Heat, who made it all the way to the finals.
Got it.
They were in the top half.
But I would also say that, yes, LeBron James is an older player, but Anthony Davis is not. Nor is Reeves, nor is anybody else that they relied on, Hachimura and company. And so you can have one older player, and especially a guy that knows how to pace himself like that of a LeBron James. Same with the Miami Heat. Jimmy Butler is now in his mid-30s or approaching that 33, 34 age range. But Tyler Hero's in his 20s. Bam Adebayo's in his late 20s. Duncan Robinson's in his 20s. All those guys, the Caleb Martins of the world that they relied on last year, all in their 20s. So while your best player can be in his 30s, you can still make up for it, as we saw with Miami and Los Angeles of a year ago, where you had LeBron in his late 30s, but the supporting cast still has energy, still has legs. What's problematic with the Golden State Warriors, everybody's old. Everybody's got a walker. Everybody's playing checkers down at the Sequoia's retirement home. I'm talking about not just Steph, because it's okay if it's Steph, and then if you got a bunch of talented youngsters around you, but when it's Steph and it's Draymond and it's Clay and you need to get these guys rest, and it's just simply not going to happen until the postseason, there's no way, it's unavoidable. At some point, that's going to be too taxing, and you're going to hit your head up against that wall where our team just simply didn't have enough time off in between games to be competitive.
The other thing that's interesting with all of this and how teams might be identifying where they want to be out of the play-in, it looked before yesterday that the Nuggets were going to be the one seed, and then they went and lost to Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs. Now it's relatively unlikely that they're going to be the one seed. And before, you felt like they were going to be the one. It almost emphasized the fact that you wanted to be in the 7-8 play-in game and win that game to be the 7, which meant you would avoid the Denver Nuggets. But now there's a chance the Nuggets are the 2. There's a chance the Nuggets are the 3. And a heightened chance. There was always that chance, but a much, much more likely chance of that now. So if you're the Warriors, not only did you get out of the 7-8 game, but if you do get out of the 9-10 area of the play-in, there's a realistic chance that, you know, you never know what's going to happen. Maybe you do take on Denver. Who knows how it's all going to work out. But the Denver loss last night kind of shifted everything around and how you're identifying what's more valuable, because you wanted to avoid the 8 at all costs. Now Denver is probably not going to be the 1, so maybe the 8 is a little more passable at this point. But you don't want to have to do the 8 seed, because that means you have to come out of the bottom half of the play-in tournament and you got to win 2 games. And something I talked about last night on postgame, Dan, was what happened last night for the Warriors is so indicative of why it was so important for them to get to the 7-8 game, because this team is so inconsistent from game to game, from week to week, from quarter to quarter, from moment to moment, from possession to possession. You don't know what team you're going to get. You might get the team you got in the first quarter, where the Warriors built a double-digit lead. You might get the team you got in the second quarter, when they got outscored by 23 points. Like, you don't know what team you're going to get, and when you have a team like that whose range of outcomes is so wide,
It's so hard to have two coin flip games go your way in a row. And that's what the Warriors are looking at now in the play-in. If you only had to win one of two in the play-in as the 8 seed, you could lose the 7-8 game, then win the next game. That's more likely, obviously, because you only have to win one. But I think those chances are heightened with this Warriors basketball team because of this group. At least of teams that are healthy, and the Kings have been really, really bad ever since Malik Monk and now Kevin Huerter have gone down. But the Warriors are so incredibly inconsistent. You don't know who you're going to get, which just means, Dan, anything can happen on any given game. And now you have to have that anything that could happen go your way in consecutive games just to make the playoffs.
All right. 888-957-9570. Lines are now officially open. Let's start things off. Oh, we're going to the North Bay. We've got a rich boy in a hot tub. It's Ricardo hanging out in Tiburon. Really quick, Ricardo, do you ever have any Klay Thompson sightings in that part of the world?
No, but I see his dog being walked all the time on the shoreline.
But not by him.
No, Rocco has a walker.
Yeah, that's when you know you got money, bro.
Hey, I'm walking Noah. Well, anyway, forget that. I'm calling because you guys are being, I think, too pessimistic. And you kind of stole my thunder talking about the San Antonio Spurs. I take the position that they're actually in a better position now. Because the whole point of getting to the 8, I thought, was to avoid Denver as a number one seed. And yes, you had the possibility of getting in with just one game, but the likelihood of beating a higher seed, which is, would probably be Phoenix, meant that you still had to play two games to get into the playoffs. So now you have the possibility of getting in. The only thing you have to do is get in, and you'll get OKC, which I think is beatable. And then all those teams that are vying for the sixth seed, they're going to get Denver. And so the best case scenario is at this point that the Warriors beat the Lakers at home and then beat Sacramento, and then they're in against OKC, which is actually a better position than being number 8 or number 6 as things turns out, thanks to the Spurs, whatever they did. So that I'm saying things are not all doom and gloom. There's still a possibility of this best case scenario, and then they get OKC and anything could happen at that point.
See, Ricardo, that's why we need to take more calls from North Bay, from that Tiburon, Marin area, the sun shining. You guys are out frolicking, enjoying life. I live in the city, man. People are urinating in Walgreens. The sun's not out. It's raining. We're miserable, man. It's the end of the world. It's Armageddon. The Warriors ain't going anywhere. No, appreciate it, Ricardo. And yeah, there is a level of optimism that potentially you don't see the Denver Nuggets. But here's the issue. Again, just getting back to what it is that I said earlier. At this point, for a team that's in their mid-30s and a team that relies on older players, it's not about Denver so much at this point that if you've got to win on the road, exactly, when on the road again, if you're playing OKC in less than 48 hours after winning your last road game, you just don't have enough left in the tank from what I've seen of this team, whether it's OKC, whether it's Minnesota, and certainly sure as hell not beating Denver.
Yes. It's like, Ricardo, if you could guarantee me the Warriors come out of the bottom half of the play-in and they get Oklahoma City or Minnesota in the first round, if you could guarantee me that and somehow the Warriors don't get negatively impacted by the effect of fatigue and exhaustion, okay, then yeah, that's an awesome outcome. But the reality is, Ricardo, coming out of the 9-10 area of the play-in is difficult because you have to win two do-or-die games. And two, you're going to be exhausted. You're going to be tired. It's what we've been talking about for the whole first hour. The Warriors were willing to risk pushing themselves into further exhaustion and further fatigue this final week of the regular season because it would have bought them the chance to only have to play one play-in game. That was worth the risk to them. But they're now dealing with, honestly, kind of the worst of both worlds. You pushed yourself, you exhausted yourself even more, and now you also have an extra game you have to go and win. Most likely. It's not a done deal. We will know tomorrow, late afternoon. There's a chance the Kings could be up by 20 at halftime, and then we'd know for sure the Warriors will not be in the top half of the play-in. But this is less about, for me, Dan, and I think the Warriors feel this way, it's now less about who your first-round opponent is. It's now just getting to the first round of the postseason. You don't have the ability to pick and choose who you want to play because you have a lot on your plate just to get to that first round now in the first place.
Yeah, and I think the Warriors would take that at this point. I think that if the Warriors are able to just get to the quote-unquote playoffs and the first round, that can be thought of as a win-win. I mean, that's how far we lowered the bar for a team that was synonymous with NBA championships. Because winning two games on the road, you lose to the number one seed in the Western Conference, and you can say, well, you know, next year we'll do things differently, and we won't necessarily seal our fate by all those games we gave away back in November and December to the Sacramentos and to Chet Holmgren's back-breaking threes at the horn.
Oh,
and Jokic so beat us with a buzzer beater. I mean, we could go down the list. There could be a level of optimism with this basketball team. But first of all, let me just clarify. Portland is no way in hell beating Sacramento tomorrow. Never have I felt so good about saying something, and not that I feel good about, you know, sealing the Warriors' fate to either the, you know, 9 or the 10.
It's not like the Kings are playing good basketball at all.
Yeah, but they're...
I mean, I'm with you, but...
The Suns, you know, they lost to the Suns by a point yesterday. They're just not losing to Portland at home. They're not losing four consecutive games and certainly not losing to Portland. That's just, to me, is not going to happen. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? I guess if you're holding out hope, there's the potential the Warriors can get in as the number eight. The question now just simply becomes, do the Warriors rest essentially your starters or your best players against Utah? And I mean, don't see the floor at all. And still hope that you have enough and you got a viable bench, which is still very much a strong suit of the Golden State Warriors. Is that enough for you to beat Utah? And how much importance are you putting on rest versus an away game is really sort of what this now comes down to with one game remaining against the Utah Jazz. Do you feel comfortable playing, once again, the Lakers on the road? See, I'm just simply a law of averages guy. I'm one of those that just... You know, I don't feel comfortable. I do not want to play the Lakers. If I'm a big Warriors fan, if I'm part of Dub Nation, I don't want to see the Lakers at Crypto because you just beat them at Crypto. The law of averages are saying that's not going to happen twice in less than 2 weeks.
And Anthony Davis did not play.
Yeah, and Anthony Davis might be more important. Forget about the home and away. All I wanted was Anthony Davis going to be healthy, right? Someone ought to poke him in the other eye. That's terrible. Don't wish that on anybody, but... For whatever reason, the last two games against the Warriors, he's had eye issues, which is sort of unusual. So Anthony Davis being healthy is really problematic, but I want to play that game at home, even if it's the Sacramento Kings. And I know that you're a 500 team at home this year, but I'm a firm believer that when it comes to the postseason, I'm still holding out hope that playing at Chase still means something. And that the fans will show up and there's going to be this energy that's going to be palpable and they'll feed off of it. Although that was certainly the case last night. And then the Warriors crapped the bed in that second quarter, which again is the reason why we're talking about where they're at right now, which is essentially sort of resigned to that number 10 seed. But where are you at? 888-957-9570. Are you okay with them being at a 9-10 and playing on the road? Grant, I think that if I was to ask you, and just simply if you were to be able to choose their fate, are you more comfortable playing a road game at L.A., or are you more comfortable playing a road game at Sacramento?
Oh, at Sacramento, for sure. No doubt about it. Let me run this scenario by you. I think this is what you're alluding to when asking me that question. There is still a chance the Warriors are the eight, but let's throw that out as a realistic possibility, because as you laid out, it would take the Blazers beating the Kings in Sacramento for that to happen. That's not going to happen. So for our purpose here, let's just pretend the eight is out of the picture. There is, though, a legitimate scenario where the Warriors are either the 9 or the 10 and they're taking on the Kings. And the only way that happens, not the only way, the easy way that happens is if the Lakers just beat New Orleans on Sunday. So I think if you're trying...
Regardless of what happens...
Regardless of what else happens.
Warriors,
if the Lakers win tomorrow, they are the
Warriors
8, which locks in the Warriors and the Kings for the 9-10. Those two can flip-flop. In, like, the Warriors will likely be the 10 because Sacramento plays Portland. And as you've said a number of times already, that's not going to happen. But as long as the Lakers win tomorrow, they will be the 8, which means the Warriors and Kings will fill out 9-10 in some order, depending on how their games play out. Warrior fans, and Dan, I'm going to ask you this as well. Should the Warrior fans just simply be rooting for the Lakers to win tomorrow to avoid having to play the Lakers in that 9-10 game? Whether it's in Sacramento, whether it's at Chase Center, I would much rather play the Sacramento Kings than I would the Lakers in the 9-10 game. So if I am dealing in the world of realism and trying to find the Warriors' best path forward, I think you got to root for a Lakers win tomorrow because that guarantees it will not be Warriors-Lakers in the 9-10 game. Whether or not it's in L.A. or at Chase or in Sac, whatever it is, I would just rather play the Kings as opposed to the Lakers.
I'm with you. And I think as Dub Nation Warrior fans out there, if you're just to sort of sit back and logistically, just sort of pragmatically not be a fan and be fanatical, but just as difficult as it is to pull for the Lakers and LeBron James, it would make more sense, I think, more viable sense for you in terms of advancing to play the Kings in that first round as opposed to the Los Angeles Lakers. And playing the Kings, who are really, if you think about it, without Herter, they're having rotational issues.
Malik Monk and Herter are gone. They don't know who they are anymore.
So when you talk about the Warriors' bench, which is, what, 10, sometimes 12 deep, sometimes it's a problem. Right? Like, it's a good problem.
I think it has been a problem.
Because
honestly,
how do you get, you know, everybody playing time? How do you appease everybody when you got, you know, 12 guys that want to get some sort of run? When you talk about the Sacramento Kings, their bench is one guy, and it's Malik Monk.
And now he's gone.
And Monk was their bench, and he's now no longer available. Kevin Herter hadn't been very good last year and looked as though he was playing his way into a trade, was very good at times throughout the season. So the Sacramento Kings have been circling the drain. And I would even argue with a healthy Herter and Monk, there were times throughout the season and especially in the latter part of the year where the Sacramento Kings were really having a difficult time. So let's keep in mind that at the end of last year, the way things ended in those seven games in which the Warriors were able to take out the then number three seeded Sacramento Kings, remember the popular sentiment was, well, Sacramento, look out. That's the new force in the West. Like, that's a young team. De'Aaron Fox, a Sabonis trade, made so much. Keegan Murray and Monk. Like, that's a team that's headed to ascension. It wasn't OKC. It wasn't Minnesota. It was the Sacramento Kings. And so they have certainly fallen from that top perch now where they're vying things out with the Golden State Warriors. But just to get right back to what it is that you laid out, I think that best case scenario for Warrior fans is that you want the Lakers to win tomorrow and that you want to see the Sacramento Kings with all the problems they're having in round one of the play-in game, albeit it will be in Sacramento because Sacramento, despite having identical records, holds the tiebreaker. There he is, 888-957-9570. Austin, once again, sleeping in on a Saturday as he joins us from San Jose. Austin, what's on your mind, my man?
Hey, what's up, fellas? What's up, man? How you doing, man? Great show, as always. You guys are talking the real deal. Listen, I get a little nervous about trying to pick opponents at this stage. I think that, your partner just laid out the scenario of Sacramento. But, you know, sometimes it's like Draymond said a couple years ago, be careful what you ask for. You know, sometimes you can say, yeah, that'll be the best matchup. But if you catch them on the wrong night, you know, they could send you home, too. So I don't know that at this stage of the game, you better be able to beat whoever is in front of you is kind of my attitude, whether it's the Lakers or the Kings. I don't think we're in a position to start picking who we want to play. And if we have to place Denver, so what? You know, you want to be in that position to even have to worry about that. So I think the Warriors aren't even there. And last night, just kind of a couple comments. Last night was a really good game, really good effort, but some deficiencies to me were obvious. On the wing, Trey Murphy, boy, he was fantastic. I was thinking to myself the whole time, can we get a guy like that that can spread the floor, shoot from the long distance, has length, has confidence. If you look at the Warrior bench, we got a lot of guys. I keep saying this, Dan. We got a lot of guys that are hustlers, and they play hard and stay ready and all these other slogans. But we need guys with skill. And beyond Steph and Clay, off the bench, we don't really have those guys. I mean, I know that we got a lot of hustle guys, but for me, the skill drops off significantly if one of those two guys isn't scoring, meaning Clay and stuff. So I think that's something for next year. You got to really look. And then the wing defense. I mean, look at CJ and those guys. They were shooting, and they had like three or four guys that could shoot it from three. And so we weren't able really to defend when it came down to stopping them. We weren't able to do it. And so that's something you got to think about for next year. All these people that want to run it back, you know, you better think twice about running it back when, with teams like New Orleans. You mentioned Sacramento. These guys are all going to get better. If you think Mike Brown's going to sit pat with his roster next year, he's going to get better. So the Warriors need to think about all that. But listen, guys, great show. I'll just keep listening, Dan. Thanks as always.
Austin, he's a little late this morning, but strong. Strong as always. And I'd like to disagree with him because it's good radio if I'm counter to anybody, but I'm right on board with my man Austin. Can't run this back. Go ahead, Grant.
The one thing I'll say maybe I disagree with, or the one thing I would just add to Austin's call, he said, I wish we could have had a guy like Trey Murphy. Well, you could have. He was drafted 17th overall in 2021. The Warriors had two picks before him in that draft. They chose Kuminga and Moses Moody.
Well, I'll do you one better. How about this year when you think about the trade deadline? And I do want to get into that, where we were just Warrior fans and Warrior management were like, well, let's just pretty much keep what it is that we have. Wiggins is playing better. This is the, you know, we still have this core. How better would you be with a Gafford or P.J. Washington or Pascal Siakam right now? Go look at Indiana and Dallas since the trade deadline and their ascension. Well,
they made it.
There's a lot of cause and effect
at the deadline
with what it is that happened at the trade deadline and their ascension and their run in the West, and the same with Indiana. And the Golden State Warriors decided not to go in that direction. All right, we can discuss that. A lot to get into. 888-957-9570. We keep it going. Warriors This Week continues with Mark Grandy and Dan Evone. We'll have much more after this quick commercial timeout.